Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and listeners of this show know we are here to share stories with creative authors and guests who are members of the healing and spiritual communities. We seek to understand ourselves, our universe, and of course our life experiences at a higher, more conscious level, so we will be better able to manage our emotions and actions. Another prime purpose of this show is to explore universal life force or energy so we can better know the true nature of our human and spiritual lives. My very special guest today is Dr. Vernon Silvest, author of The End of Fear, a book of fabulous insight of the medical world of pathology, or the science of disease, and traditional medical concepts so we can understand healing on levels beyond what is taught in books or professional training. The places and people Dr. Silvest has been guided to interact with are sources for valuing life, energy, and health with new perspective. Hello, Dr. Silvest.
Hello, Cheryl. Thanks for having me. It's a delight to be on.
It's my pleasure. Let me tell our audience something about some of your background and training. Dr. Silvest attended LSU School of Medicine in New Orleans and completed his pathology training at the University of Michigan. He has served on the staff and on the board of directors of Johnson, Willis, and Chippenham Hospitals in Richmond, Virginia. Dr. Silvest is the director of the Institute for Higher Healing, where he practiced holistic primary care medicine, and also is on the board of directors for the American Holistic Medical Association. After 36 years in the practice of pathology, Dr. Silvest recently retired to devote his time and attention to share information that led to his own healing process and to new approaches to the healing process utilizing both science and spirituality. Dr. Silvest and his wife, Anne, own and operate Healing Waters Lodge, a holistic retreat center in the mountains of Highland County. Now, Vernon, I have just given a very small description of your extensive professional life. Would you please tell us a more personal description and possibly your motivation for writing this book, The End of Fear?
Well, my professional life ultimately was motivated by my desire to search and try to find what I would sometimes think of as a secret. As I was growing up as a Methodist preacher's kid, I saw a lot of suffering in the world around. Pain and suffering came to my father's office, and I was wondering, you know, why is there so much pain, suffering, sadness? There must be something that needs to be discovered to recognize how we can change things. And so this led to my search, and I did search spirituality, being raised as a Methodist minister's son, didn't quite understand or find the answer within that more orthodox concept of sin, guilt, and punishment. I did explore my father's psychology books as I was growing up, and I did find some comfort because it said if you think you're crazy, you're not crazy because crazy people don't know they're crazy. And so I felt
so
better.
So true.
As a preteen, dealing with all the fears that I experienced and the fears that I observed others experiencing. And so ultimately I went into medicine because, you know, I'm a body, we're bodies. And I thought, well, biology was really fascinating to me, and maybe there's some secret there. And so I got my medical degree, and I cut open hearts. I didn't find feelings. I cut open brains. I didn't find thoughts. I did have to rotate through psychiatry in medical school, and I remember being assigned a patient who was depressed, and I spent an hour with her in the clinic, and after an hour, we both left depressed.
I think what you were searching for there was the understanding that some of our thoughts are creating the symptoms in our body and some of the disease. And you know what? Listening to you just now reminded me very much of my childhood, because I had those same questions. I was the daughter of a podiatrist, and I didn't know at the time that I was a sensitive and empathic and was picking up a lot of the fears and worries and thoughts and physical symptoms of a lot of the people who were suffering, very much like what you saw. So I think we may have had the need to learn more about our energetic essence and our physical bodies so we could find a way to help ourselves and others know the true nature of life. Would you say that might be your sensitivity
as
a child?
Absolutely true, but of course that wasn't part of the medical curriculum, and as you observed in your psychiatric training or practice, you didn't find the solution. And yes, I did pick up on the sadness of the patient. I felt sad for her and myself. The psychiatry was Freudian in approach, and basically Freudian psychotherapy is to try to strengthen the ego, and that doesn't work. It just delays things. And actually,
because a lot of the ego thoughts are illusion. The reality,
much of
our reality comes from within our soul remembrances.
Well, what the conventional psychotherapy, unfortunately, most psychotherapists are not conventional now, but you know, if you were depressed, they would say you've internalized your anger and you should acknowledge you're angry. And anger is simply an attempt to repress depression, which is what needs to be healed so that you can go beyond it and experience a higher energy beyond that veil. It's like going through the veil. As Socrates, when he responded to his students complaining to him because he confused them, he said, well, it's because I'm totally confused myself. Confusion is the first step into wisdom. And so I would say depression is the first step into bliss. So don't hide it, face it, but you can go through it and don't be attached to it. I gave up after medical school and residency, and I just pursued life like everyone else does, or most other people do, and that was to find happiness in relationships and accomplishments and finances and my physical experience, and I didn't find it there. My wife didn't make me happy, and I didn't make her happy. We wound up divorced, and I felt bad about that.
I don't think it's so much that our physical life needs to be neglected. I think we just need to add to that component.
I'm not saying to neglect it, but what happens is if we look just to our physical life for happiness, we will be disappointed.
Yes,
absolutely. And in my own disappointment and my own feelings of disappointment, ultimately I got physically sick and had an incurable disease for which I had a genetic marker in HLA-B27, it's Reiter's disease, and after 4.5 years of suffering and ultimately winding up so depressed I was suicidal, I finally surrendered and sought a spiritual answer. There must be something that I don't know. Within 9 months, I was completely well, and I did find a spiritual answer, and I did begin to study science at another level, and I understood the multidimensionality of our nature, that we are energetic beings, multidimensional, and we have within us a higher self, a Christ self, to use the Christian language, that we can access, that's absolutely blissful, and we need do nothing to experience it. And so what I had to learn is to let go of my attachment to all the things I thought I had to do to be happy.
Yeah, you had to bring yourself into balance with your energetic or spiritual essence, your soul essence, and your ego or physical life, which is what this show is all about, understanding that the duality splits us apart and creates health problems and other issues. And by bringing ourselves together into the oneness of our true nature, we can find a way to enjoy and be happy in life and beyond this world. I want to read a beautiful thought that you gave in your book that quite expresses my own intuitive thought of finding answers to these important questions about ourselves and the purpose of life. May I read it?
Sure.
Comes from your book. I also extend my gratitude to many men and women of science whose work has brought our culture to a point where it is possible to integrate spiritual teachings and scientific information for a greater understanding of our true nature, and also to the teachers of modern psychology for revealing unseen dynamics of consciousness so that we can better understand the blocks to our experience of our true nature. And can you give your vision of how we are all truly much more than we believe ourselves to be, and how by knowing this, we can improve our health and the quality of our relationships with others? Because that's what this thought implies, and it is, in my understanding and my many Reiki intuitive sessions and readings for people, what comes through in the messages of love from higher energy or consciousness. So can you tell us something about your vision of how we are truly much more than we believe?
Well, we're not bodies. We're omnipresent energy fields of consciousness. Energy is consciousness. Consciousness is energy. Our thoughts are creative. Our body is a manifestation of our thoughts. We do, in our experience now in the body, have an unconscious. And in healing, what we need to do sometimes is to explore what is in the unconscious, because the thoughts that are hidden there will sometimes manifest in our experience of the body and events around us. In other words, our thoughts are images that we see. But as energies of consciousness, we're also multidimensional, and now we have discovered that there is a higher dimension in which we are created, and that has not changed. We are absolutely perfect. We are created by God in the image of God. We're pure love, pure joy, omnipotent and omniscient, but we have temporarily become unaware of that and are attempting to make a substitute reality.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Freud recognized when he explored the ego, the superego and the id, but he did not recognize something beyond that psychological dynamic, and that was the higher self. Now, Carl
yes.
Jung did recognize the higher self, and so he brought in the spiritual component. And what science is now telling us is the physical world is basically an illusion. It is a thought form. It's a collective thought form. It's a collective hallucination. And if you're trying to make yourself happy through a hallucination, it's not going to work. If you're having a sad dream, it's your sadness that's producing the dream, and there's nothing in the dream that's going to make you happy unless you heal the sadness. Now, where our awareness is, we can activate our connection with that higher energy, which has not been altered, the higher self, if you will. And that energy will come through, and if we're willing to experience it, it is unconditional love, meaning you love because you're love, not because of what anybody does or doesn't do. You just love. If we're willing to experience that, then that will come through, and it will manifest itself in a dream that reflects love, and then the body is healed, the world around us is healed. And this is what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is let it be as if it had not happened. And then its effect can disappear.
Well, perhaps a simpler way of saying this is to focus on a positive behavior. Many parents, you know, when their children do something that is not acceptable to them, they get very negative about it and tell them they can't do it. So they're focusing on the negative. But if we just view people with eyes of love and expectancy for good things to happen, that seems to happen more and more, and we don't focus on the other things that we really don't want to be involved in, the illusion, so to put it. That's another way of looking at this. But let's go to something of the work and mission.
Let me address that just a moment. You're
okay.
Absolutely right. In other words, you look at the person, you see them as innocent.
Yes.
You don't see what they just said or what they thought they were going to do as their reality. But another aspect when you're coming to the behavior of children is parents frequently don't understand why they're upset. And what I discovered with my own children is when they disobeyed me, I was upset because they didn't respect me. And when I
mm-hmm.
let go of my need for them to respect me, then I could lay down the same rules and, if appropriate, to teach them, ground them, so to speak, but without being upset, and their response was totally different. So when you approach people with love, their response will be different.
Yes,
so I
absolutely.
Think a lot of times when parents are upset, it's because their children are not respecting them more than their fear of what will happen to their children. But that's also a problem, and what you're saying is absolutely right. See them as perfect. And see their behavior.
See them as love. See them as beauty. See them as kindness.
Yes.
See them as the vision of the divine light that flows through them, their soul. See them as their soul reflects. And this is, I have spent many shows trying to help parents see that the children come in so beautiful and loving. And when they start to reflect inappropriate behavior, it's because the parents or the teachers or the physicians are not setting this example that you and I are trying to express here right now. Be the example. Be the love. Don't need something for yourself, because then you take yourself away from the equation of what you're trying to achieve. Right?
Right. We look
okay.
at our children and focus on them with intent to love. They will unconsciously pick it up and they begin to behave in a loving way. And we
absolutely
communicate to them with our thoughts without saying a word, and they will unconsciously pick it up.
Absolutely. Now, let's go to something about the work and mission of the Healing Waters Farm in Virginia and some of the people who have been involved in this effort. Can you tell us about some of the people who have been there before you?
Well, it's very interesting. The original farm family sold the farm to Raymond Moody.
And he's been a guest on my show.
I
just adore him.
And I'm reading his latest book right now. And you know, he studied life after life. And then he moved to Georgia and sold the land to Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And she analyzed the stages people go through in the dying process and helped develop the hospice program in this country and trained hospice counselors. And so she was studying the dying process. And she sold the farm to a friend of ours in 95, who sold it to us in 97. And then I retired from an active practice of pathology in October 2010. And we're out here developing Healing Waters Lodge, and we're studying life. So it's a very interesting sequence, studying life after life.
Well, you know.
Process, studying life and helping people to experience a vibrant, healthy, happy, long life here on the Earth plane.
Well, you know,
that's our goal. www.healingwaterslodge.com.
Yes. You know, I am very aware of Dr. Kubler-Ross's work. I have on my shelf in my office a child's book that she wrote, Remember the Secret, that's so beautiful. And I was a hospice volunteer myself for 8 years. And in doing that work and developing as an intuitive healer and medium and connection to spirit, I am thrilled that you knew her and that I know Dr. Raymond Moody. And we're all of us doing the same work. The work that we're doing is trying to investigate our soul or our inner self, and like Plato or Socrates, and to help people understand that they are very much more than the physical body. And when you say to a person, you know, we are not a physical body, for many it's very hard to get that concept. But it is the truth. And we are the electrical impulse of love from our heart, from our soul, from our mind, from higher consciousness, from being connected to dimensions beyond this life. And there really is no death. There is just movement of energy from beyond time and space and eternally. So I'm very thrilled to talk about that. Can we go on to when you mentioned fear and its effect on our health? What fears are you suggesting many people have? How were they formed and how are they reinforced?
Well, fear is reinforced by fear itself, and fear is an altered state of consciousness. It is a fall in awareness. It, in a sense, is a soul level of insanity. If we have, and people wonder, you know, if we're pure love, how can we experience fear? Well, if you're aware of something, and you're a self-aware and a free-willed individual, then it is possible to have it hold in your mind the idea of the opposite of what you're aware of. But that doesn't make the opposite real. But our minds are powerful enough to do that, and particularly when we come together in a group mind and then begin to perceive something that is fearful and experience fear, we go into an altered state of consciousness and our awareness falls into a lower frequency and we become not directly aware of higher frequency of truth. So basically what it is a hallucinatory state, a delusional hallucinatory state in which we then attempt to substitute for what we lost. Mm-hmm. And this is a phenomenon of separation. I go into it in much more detail in the book.
Yes, you do. But you know what? Yeah, most people, their greatest fear is fear of the unknown, fear of death, fear of loss of love or money, and fear of pain of any kind. So all these fears, if focused on, will come into our reality. The thoughts may come in. The key is not to allow them to remain, to let them float through our existence, and constantly go back to that better state of being trusting, allowing, surrendering, and knowing that ultimately we will be all right. And I think that's what many people aren't able to do. But I'd like to go to something very, very funny that happened. I have a coincidence to share with you. But first, I love the stories of your trip with Anne to India and your meeting with Sai Baba. And as my book, Life is No Coincidence, suggests, we are meeting the right people and having the experiences best in line with our inner or our soul development. So can you tell us something about your experience with this spiritual leader and healer?
Well, I was introduced to Sai Baba by a nurse in Richmond, Virginia, who was teaching healing touch therapy, and it was when healing touch therapy was sort of a revolutionary idea in the medical community, but I, as a doctor, took it. This was after my healing and self-discovery, and she introduced me to Sai Baba, and I had a sense that I would eventually go and meet him. And in 1989, my wife and I spent, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks there at his ashram, and it was a great experience in self-discovery and in the witness to love and his love. We revisited again in 1993 and had some tremendous experiences that would have to, I think, be the subject of another talk show. But he is one who has witnessed to us the fact that we can be at that level of consciousness and still be in body where we are aware of our oneness with the divine and express it in a miraculous way, since we're not limited by what we call physical laws.
And he's able to manifest, isn't he?
Physical laws are part of the illusion. And if you're in a dream, you can, if you know that's the dream, then you can manipulate the dream. And if you're coming from love, you can do it in the most powerful way. And yes, he did manifest objects from nothing. He materialized things. He did raise people from the dead.
People would call that miracles, and they are.
Yes. And what we need to know is it's our goal is to make miracles natural. And this is what
yes.
I discovered in my own life, in my own healing of an incurable disease, but importantly in the practice of medicine and in realizing that our thoughts are images that we see, and much of what we see is a manifestation of unconscious energy. When you look at the physical body as a symbol, you can then go from that symbol into what is in the unconscious producing that physical malady, and then you can help people get in touch with the mental emotional equivalent of their disease and heal it, and then the disease is healed. And I had phenomenal results. Chronic disease is healing in one session. I've seen cancers disappear, orthopedic problems going away without therapy, and on it goes. It's just miraculous. But it did take a different approach, recognizing spirit, mind, and body, and the blockage
yes.
is the level
mm-hmm.
of mind. And this is where healing occurs. And in my book, I have a chapter called The Body is a Symbol, and it does correspond to the chakra systems. The body is an archetypical symbol, and you can look at what part of your body is involved and predict what the mental emotional equivalent is, and then do some self-study, do some prayer work, and heal it and get well.
Well, that's what I work with Reiki.
It mm-hmm. does require forgiveness, yes.
Yes.
And,
with Reiki, I also do that. Yeah, I work
yes.
with the chakras, the energy
right.
points, and help people to connect to their own higher energy and self. So once they know this connection is made, they change their perception, and by changing their perception, healing happens. But I want to just tell you the funny story.
Let me just insert this. The miracle happens when one who temporarily has more gives to one who temporarily has less. And this is what you're doing in Reiki. You're coming in with a higher energy and lifting their energy and healing their energy field and helping them reconnect with that which is within themselves. And
because it's all coming from the state of love and cooperation, not competition, not the need to change anything about them, but to allow them to know themselves. But the story I wanted to tell you was, in the book you talk of an egg-shaped polished stone that you received from Sai Baba, and I took a healing course with Ruth Rendelay, who wrote Seraphim Blueprint, and at that course she gave me an aqua pale egg-shaped stone, just as you received. And at the time, I didn't know what it meant. I was maybe a little disappointed, as you might have been when you received it. But later I learned that it was called a lingam. And it's to be placed on the Hindu altar to symbolize the omnipresence of God, as well as formlessness into form and vice versa. Now, so that's what we are. We are form and we are formless. And we are all one with the universe in our soul connection to each other.
Who gave you your lingam? I'm curious.
Ruth Rendelay, who works with a healing system known as the Seraphim Blueprint. She's from Australia. And I giggled when I heard that you got the same stone.
Where
I didn't know what it meant.
Where did you get her lingam?
I don't know where she got it, but she handed it to me.
Well,
and
Sai Baba materialized the lingam, and the Indians there at the ashram are the ones who clued me into how
what it was.
And
I didn't know what it was either,
because
I don't know that much about crystals or stones.
When I came back to the United States, after a number of years, I was working with somebody who was doing some holistic work, and they were experiencing some challenges. And I gave that person the lingam. I passed it on.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing to pass it on, because we don't really need the physical material,
things. I was interested in that somebody passed the lingam on to you. It's kind of interesting.
Now I need to pass it on to someone else, like you did.
Well, I was wondering is it the same lingam?
It could. Oh, that would be another coincidence, which is not really a coincidence, which is divine intervention.
Well, I prayed about it the other night, and I asked where was the lingam.
So maybe it is, and it's with me now.
You research it and let me know.
Okay, I will. But I wish to thank you, Dr. Vernon Silvestre, for joining me today on Healing From Within and sharing your story, your wisdom, and a defined, practical, loving way in your new book, The End of Fear, to view our physical and spiritual energies for a more productive and fear-free life experience. For more information about Dr. Silvestre, The Healing Waters Lodge, and his new book, go to healingwaterslodge.com or bmsilvestremd.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have spoken of healers and philosophers, Sai Baba and others, and how the quality of our thoughts are as empowering or disempowering as our actions. The choice must be to analyze each of our thoughts to reveal if it is loving and positive so that we may heal the negative energy in our subconscious or inner soul essence and reprogram our health, bringing peace and a spontaneous, new, loving approach to healthy living. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, on the radio page to listen to leaders in the fields of health, energy medicine, spirituality, and science sharing their new vision of our ability to grow and love and share this wonderful life experience with all that you already are, and all that you still wish to become.